Save big this holiday season. All in the Kroger app.
Buy two, get three free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up. Then get a flavorful Kroger spiral sliced ham for 89 cents a pound with an additional $25 purchase. Limit two, all with your card.
Shop these deals at your local Kroger today. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
We often look at health as the end, but health is a means to an end. A healthy body should not be the end goal. A healthy body is a means to an end. The body is the vehicle to bring us to God, to bring us to self-realization, to bring us to enlightenment, to bring us to our highest purpose here on the planet. But if we get stuck on the physical body thinking that this is the end, this is the all there is, that my whole goal in life is to be as healthy as I can be, which I got stuck in that mindset, to be the fittest I can be, the healthiest I can be, the strongest I can be. It gets stuck in that mindset and then I forget. It's like, oh yeah, but this is the material world. I'm attached to the material world.
You are here for a reason. But navigating this human life can be challenging. How do you care for your body, mind, and spirit to make the most of your time here on Earth? How can you harness your incredible human potential? In this podcast, we explore these questions and more to help you craft your best life yet. Welcome to I Am Human. Hello, humans. I am your host, Dr. Yami, and I'm honored to be here with you today. Thank you for subscribing, rating, reviewing, and sharing this podcast. We so deeply appreciate it. To be human means to feel lost and disconnected, but it also means to develop a strong spirituality that connects you to the world and beyond. My guest today has had this experience and is sharing his story with us today. Nathan Crane is a multifaceted health professional and inspirational leader with an impressive background as a certified nutrition coach, certified holistic cancer coach, best-selling author, inspirational speaker, natural health researcher and educator, plant-powered athlete, and 20-time award-winning documentary filmmaker with over 17 years of dedication to natural health, leadership, and personal development. His work has transformed millions of lives, providing valuable insights and practical advice on holistic health and wellness. And in our discussion today, Nathan tells us about his journey, which has been quite dramatic and pretty shocking, all that he's been through. And he has really created his life from this place of desperation and has really done some great work with it and has learned so much. So you get to hear his whole story. And we get really spiritual in this episode. So if you're into that, I hope that you love it. But if you're curious, I would really recommend that you take a listen because there's some really amazing things that are shared. He also talks about why he's so passionate about helping people who have been diagnosed with cancer and what he has learned about cancer conquerors, as he calls them, people who have had cancer, even people who have had stage 3, stage 4 cancer that were able to reverse their cancer with diet and nutrition and spiritual practices as well. So it's a fantastic episode. It is a wonderful, very interesting conversation. I know that you're really going to appreciate it and take away some valuable insights. Thank you so much for being here. I appreciate you so much. I hope that you have a fantastic day. And now let's welcome Nathan Crane. The information on this podcast is for informational and educational purposes only. It is not meant to replace careful evaluation and treatment. If you have concerns about your health or well-being, please consult a healthcare professional. This podcast episode contains sensitive topics that may be triggering to certain people. Listener discretion is advised. Nathan Crane, welcome to I Am Human. I know that right now we're both holding back laughter because we've had quite an ordeal trying to start the recording for this episode. So thank you so much for your patience this morning and welcome to the show.
Hey, what's life without a little technical challenge and difficulty to teach us patience and really test us and say, hey, are you actually practicing what you preach, right? So
yes,
happy to be here. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah. And we definitely, you know, we don't want to get bored. You know, it's good to have a little interesting things in life, some challenges. But Nathan, let's get to know you a little bit more. Tell us about your plant-based journey, your background. How did you get to where you are today?
Oh my gosh, that's a long journey. That's I mean, there's a long version and a short version. Let me give you a short version. I grew up in Bozeman, Montana, and lived there until I was about 18. And I went through a pretty rough childhood. Ended up experimenting with cigarettes at like 9 years old, 10 years old. Started experimenting with alcohol around 12 years old, you know, marijuana at the same time, somewhere between 10 and 12 years old. And got into hard drugs about 13, 14, 15. Was full-blown addict and homeless at 15, 16 years old. And almost dead by 18. And so I was very sick. I was very weak. I was very lost mentally, emotionally, depressed, suicidal. Just was not living a happy life by any terms of that word. And I had a big awakening, like a big epiphany, a vision. I was actually staying with my best friend's family at the time, Dennis and Martina Davis, and they were beautiful people, vegetarian, so they're eating healthy, mostly whole food. We talk about classical music and Buddhism and Jesus and meditation, and I would sit and listen to these conversations, and just my soul was yearning for, you know, this other potential of life, which I just had really never had any of that experience up to that point. And at 18, my best friend came back from like a military camp, and we were in a lot of trouble. And he basically said, I'm moving to San Diego, and I'm leaving in like a week. And he said, I'm moving to San Diego. And I said, wait for me. I need a week or two, and then I'm going with you. Let's do this. We need to get out of here. So we both, long story short, we ended up in San Diego, ran out of gas, basically started my life over in Oceanside, California at 18 years old. It was 2005. And I knew what it was like to be very sick, very unhealthy, growing up on fast food, drugs, alcohol, cigarettes, depression, all of this. And I really got committed to learning what it meant to be healthy, to live a spiritual life, to heal emotionally the traumas, the childhood traumas that I'd been through. And so I started diving deep into personal development and self-growth and spiritual teachings and Buddhism and Taoism and chanting with Hare Krishnas and spending many sweat lodges and ceremonies with Native American elders and meditating with Buddhist monks and really learning what it meant to be healthy and to live a good life. And that was in San Diego. I met my wife. We moved out to Vista, which was North County, San Diego. And then we had our daughter, Luna. And when she was born, up to that point, I had been diving more into like health research and watching documentaries. And, you know, as you kind of go down the spiritual path, you generally go down the health path because you're like, oh, I got to take care of my body too, right? I need to take care of this vehicle that's bringing me closer to God. And the nutritional side led me to a plant-based diet. And so in around 2010, 2011, around the time my daughter was born, my wife and I went on a 100% raw vegan diet, did that for a year. And then have been plant-based ever since, mostly vegan, you know, vegetarian a little bit. I mean, we do some eggs and honey and things like that. So I wouldn't say we're strict vegan. In terms of the moral philosophy behind veganism, which I love very much, which is the, you know, do as little harm to animals as possible. I think that goes way beyond veganism. I mean, that goes into all spiritual traditions for eternity. I mean, if you go to Buddhism, you go to Hinduism, you know, the Vedanta, Taoism, basically any major spiritual tradition that has produced enlightened beings of our time have all adopted a vegetarian diet. And reason being is because compassion, right? It's like, thou shalt not kill. I mean, one of the Ten Commandments, thou shalt not kill. It doesn't say thou shalt not kill humans. It says thou shalt not kill. And when we do less and less harm to ourselves, to others, to animals, we practice compassion, we become more compassionate. We ourselves become more compassionate, which is the identity of God. That is the expression of God, is love, compassion, kindness, just generosity, forgiveness. And so it was really it was combination really of all three of health, watching health documentaries. I think the first one I watched, one of the very first ones, was about the Gerson therapy, which was called A Beautiful Truth. It's an older film. and how people reversed cancers. They healed cancers on, you know, vegetarian or vegan diet, whole food, lots of raw juice. Watched that and then some others. And then, you know, as I was meditating and practicing spiritual practices, it was like that combination of like, oh, this is the healthiest diet and this is the spiritual diet, if you will. And I started learning about self-reliance, sustainability. I was like, and it's more sustainable to grow our own food and live in harmony with nature. And so it was really like a trifecta all around the same time that reinforced my reason to be plant-based. So yeah, my wife and I, my daughter and my son have all been plant-based since around 2010, except my son was born in 2015. And that's been life-changing. I mean, for all the reasons I just mentioned.
Wow. What a journey. I mean, that's incredible that you got into substances so young. And I just, my heart goes out to little Nathan. I mean, I can't imagine how you were feeling as a teenager, feeling so lost. I'd love to know, what do you think was the spark that gave you hope? Because, you know, you mentioned you were suicidal. I mean, you were like at rock bottom. It could have just been easy for you to just continue to, you know, live that life. What was it that gave you that hope that I can turn things around? I can feel better.
There was a really interesting experience I had. It was multiple, but the one about the suicidal thing. So I was staying at my dad's. He had remarried for like the fourth or fifth time. This was a very short marriage. Like a few of them were, he'd gone through his own challenges and abuse and substance abuse and, you know, a lot of his own challenges in life. And I was staying at their house, him and his newly wife's house. And I had just gotten in trouble for one of the last times with the police. Like I threw a knife at him. I was running from him. I got taken down by the dogs. I was all bloody. It was really bad. I was robbing cars. I was really drunk and high. And, you know, I got like 7 charges that night and they were going to charge me with a felony. And my file as a teenager was already like that thick. I was already on probation. And my probation officer said, one more time and you're going to jail. You're going to juvie. And that was one more time too many. That was 7 times. And thank God that police officer had it in his heart to drop the felony. And, you know, I see that as being guided and protected by angels. Because that felony would have been, that would have really, I probably would have been in jail for years because of that. It would have been, you know, the straw that broke the camel's back. And so those 7 charges ended up putting me in jail. And like I had to go, so I already went to court and said, yeah, you're going to jail, you're house arrest, you're going to be on house arrest, you have to blow into an alcohol thing, you have, you know, an ankle monitor, all this kind of stuff. I think I was 16 or 17. And I remember laying there the night before they were going to pick me up and take me to jail. And I had a knife and I wrote a letter to my best friend and I attempted. And then I laid down, I went to sleep and I was like, that was it. I just gave in right there. I was like, I'm so done with this. The suffering was so brutal. You know, the mental, emotional suffering was so brutal. I was so depressed. I was so lost. I was so anguished. And I fell asleep and I did not expect to wake up from that. And I did. I woke up and the cut had already like healed over. And I was both shocked and relieved at the same time. I was relieved because that my soul, that part of me did not want to go. It was not my time. But I was shocked because I was like, there's no way that could have happened. Like there was no way, like I cut pretty solid. It was a big, you know, it was a big like military type knife. And I probably shouldn't have woken up from that, but I did. And the cut was already healed when they did take, but then, you know, then the reality hit. It was like, oh shit, I'm going to jail. So then I ended up in jail the next day. They took me to this juvenile delinquency where I was locked in a room like 23 hours a day, 22 hours a day. And they saw the cut. And so they put me in the, you know, the padded room, the suicide room, like with the camera in there and everything. So I was in there. But that was a really big, like that was kind of this soul stirring moment of like, why am I still here? I think that sparked it. Then maybe sometime within a year or two after that, when I was staying with my best friend's family, the Davises, who I was having these wonderful, you know, I was out partying and doing all this crazy stuff and drunk and running from the police and robbing and stealing and being a terrible person. Then I'd go to their house and I'd sit and we'd talk about frequencies of thought and meditation and Buddhism and laughter and love. And like, I would soak that up. And then I'd go out and do this, all this crazy stuff and come back and soak that up. You know, there was a 2 or 3 months there where I found, so it was a combination of things. I was psilocybin, so eating mushrooms and going out into the forest. And this started to connect me with nature in a way that I hadn't remembered connecting before, maybe except when I was like 9 or 10 years old, laying out on the trampoline at night and looking up at the stars and just feeling that awe, that all encompassing awe and oneness of the universe. But with the mushrooms and going out in the forest, it's, you know, I could see the trees vibrating and I was like, the trees are alive. I was like, they're living, you know, like telling my friends, like, the trees are alive. Like now I'm like, well, yeah, of course they're alive. But then, you know, as a teenager, totally disconnected from nature and from God, it was like, oh my God, they're living, they're breathing. I was like hugging the trees and, you know, and so that started to wake me up a bit, started to show me I was getting downloads and insights and things like that, but then still partying and still doing all the stuff. And then I was sitting with my friend's family and we were talking about something. And as I was sitting there, I actually had this vision. I had this vision that I was standing on a stage and I was not on mushrooms at this point, by the way. I was sitting on his couch and I saw myself in the future and I was standing on a stage and I was talking to like thousands of people. And what I was doing was helping people. And I was like, I saw this future part of myself helping others. And it felt amazing. It was like, it was literally, I knew it was like a vision of the future. I could feel it. And then that, and my eyes were wide open and that vision went away. And that part lingered inside of me that was like, maybe there's something else for me. Because this is all I knew. All I knew was running around with gangsters and drugs and drug dealing and run away from police and being in jail. And like, I was just being really, really good at being really, really bad. That's like all I knew. That's what my life was, right? And I was going to be as bad as, I was going to be as good at being as bad as I possibly could. And it was either death or prison. I mean, that was the two options where I was headed. And after that vision, then when my friend came back not too long after that and said, I moved to San Diego, I just knew it. I was like, I need to go. I need to go. I need to get out of this. I need to change my life. I don't know what we're going to do. I don't know anybody there. I don't know anything, but I know I need to go and I know I need to change and I know I need to get sober and move forward. And we did. And it was really crazy. I'll tell you this one thing that I remember was like, there was one time because I was drinking a lot of alcohol every single day by that point. I mean, I'd drink 20, 30 beers in a day. I'd drink 15, 20 shots of vodka. Like I would just pouring glasses, right? Uppers, downers, pills, things, you name it, all kinds of stuff. All day, all night, you know, we'd stay up all night and then sun would come up, go to sleep, I don't know, 5, 6 hours, 7 hours, it's 2 in the afternoon, 3 in the afternoon, and then we start again. We do that every single day. And there was one time during that period where like I had to go do like a cash job with my dad to move furniture, make a little bit of money. And I didn't have any alcohol. We ran out and it was like, okay, we got to go work for a day. So, okay, I'm not going to drink until we get back. And that like 8 hours, I went into like detoxes. Like it was that bad. After like 8 hours, I was detoxing. I was sweating. I was, you know, felt like throwing up. I felt like I was dying. Like my body was so dependent on the alcohol and drugs by that point. But when we decided to move to San Diego and just stop cold turkey on the drive, not only did I not have detoxes, not only did I not feel sick, not only did I, none of that happen, but by the time we got there and then for the next months following that, I felt higher, like I felt clearer, I felt better than I had ever felt on any substance up to that point. And it was I saw it as a true miracle, as a blessing. It was like, you're on the right path. This is what you're supposed to be doing right now. And it was an incredible experience for me because I was like, I didn't know I could feel this good being sober. and it was very transformational for me. And then, you know, over the years, as I dove deeper and deeper into meditation and different spiritual practices, I realized I could get to those heightened states of being that I was on any drug or any mushroom, you know, any psychedelic, without the downsides, without the come down, without the side effects, that I could get there just through meditation. So those things all dropped away. Like the hardest one for me was alcohol. It took me years to finally stop alcohol 100%. I still struggled with it until probably my mid-20s to late 20s. I still struggled with it a bit, off and on. But, you know, the cigarettes, the hard drugs, all that stuff, that went away really quickly because it was just, there was no longer any benefit to me whatsoever. And I was finding peace and happiness, even when I was struggling. I mean, it was not easy, right? My car was broken into, my wallet was stolen. I had a job interview the next day. I was supposed to be there. I had to have my ID. I had to have my social security. They weren't going to let me in. I didn't have any money for clothes and food or anything. I started a commission only sales job. I had to, you know, my manager and my his top salesperson were betting in front of me because I had one pair of clothes at the time, one pair of nice clothes I borrowed for $100. It was all white suit, like just white long sleeve shirt, white tie, white pants. Right? And I'm standing there, no idea, you know, this fresh green young kid, like, hey, I'm here to work, no idea what I'm doing. And they're betting. I bet you $100 he lasts a week. I'll bet you 200, right in front of me, like how long I'm going to last at this really tough sales job, by the way. And so it was not easy. I was sleeping in the bathroom. I was washing my hair in there because I couldn't catch the bus. The bus didn't run so late sometimes. And I was sleeping on a shared bed. I was on a futon with my friend in a Mexican family's garage. You know, it was like, there was nothing easy about anything that I was doing, yet every day was a blessing. Every day brought excitement. Every day I had something to look forward to. I had this new life to look forward to. It was so refreshing because I wasn't running from the police. I wasn't, you know, high on all these drugs. I wasn't, you know, it was like I actually saw some potential in the future. Even it was so unknown and it was so challenging. And many people today would probably run away from that. I saw it as an opportunity. And slowly but surely, you know, I actually ended up becoming my manager's boss. And then I ran three locations. And then I was recruiting for, you know, I was top salesperson in the whole country out of like 450 locations. And I became a district manager. And then I was going to be hired to be a regional sales director. And then I quit because I was getting really sick from the stress. I was working 7 days a week, 16 hours a day. And then started getting into partying again at night. And it was like, oh God, I got to get out of this. I'm getting into the same stuff again. It was like that. You know, have you ever had that experience? Like you're trying to quit something. It could be sugar. It could be some kind of addiction. It could be something that's not good for you. And you go a while without it. And then all of a sudden, before you know it, like a little bit is in your life. And then a little bit again, then more and then more and more. And you're like, oh my God, I'm doing it again. You know, could be fighting with your spouse or, you know, getting addicted to drama or whatever. And I saw that and it was like, I just kept seeing that pattern. Then I'd have to go inside and heal me, heal my emotions, heal my traumas, heal my belief systems and do deeper work there. And then, okay, I'd go a while and then all of a sudden, oh, I'm drinking wine again. Oh, wine's good for you. You know, it's got resveratrol, it's got antioxidants. And I'm like, no, you're lying to yourself. You're lying to yourself. This is poison. This is poison. You don't need this to feel good, to feel happy. The happiness is inside you. So, you know, that kept going and through the practices. So the plant-based living has helped me so much because of one, you focus on health, right? And you're like, I want to be healthy. I want to be healthy. So I'm going to eat healthier. So I'm going to eat more vegetables, more fruit. So I want to be healthy. So I'm going to eat organic and less pesticides and less chemicals. I want to eat healthier. Oh, you know what? Let me support farmers markets and get more local food because that's healthier for me, more seasonal, more local. That's healthier. So then you're supporting farmers markets, or maybe you grow a little food yourself. And so that becomes better for you. It's more sustainable. It's better for the planet. Certainly better for the animals. We're not eating them. They don't want to be eaten. You know, they don't want to be killed. And so taking care of your health, it's like I talk about there's three core levels of purpose, you know, and one of those core levels is the personal purpose. And part of the personal purpose is physical health, right? Mental health, physical health, emotional health, vocational health, financial health, relational health, environmental health. These are the aspects of our personal purpose that if we take care of each one of these, then our life becomes a lot more enjoyable, a lot happier, a lot healthier. You know, but that's just the first level. Most of us, I wasn't healthy in any one of those areas, you know? And so it was like, okay, physical health, oh, then mental health, then emotional health, then each one of those, building on them, building on them, building on them. And the more we focus on one area, the more we're going to obviously see results in that area and we're going to feel better. And it's like, you know, with the physical health side, though, we can go to the extreme. And I think that's a big realization I've had recently. I was reading Raja Yoga from Swami Vivekananda. And one of the things he said in there is, and it hit me so hard, we often look at health as the end, but health is a means to an end. A healthy body should not be the end goal. A healthy body is a means to an end. The body is the vehicle to bring us to God, to bring us to self-realization, to bring us to enlightenment, to bring us to our highest purpose here on the planet. But if we get stuck on the physical body thinking that this is the end, this is the all there is, that my whole goal in life is to be as healthy as I can be, which I got stuck in that mindset, to be the fittest I can be, the healthiest I can be, the strongest I can be. It gets stuck in that mindset and then I forget. It's like, oh yeah, but this is the material world. I'm attached to the material world. Attachment is what leads to suffering because eventually your strength will weaken, your skin will sag, your body will disease, right? That's part of the birth, the dying process. We're born, we grow, and we die. But along that process, we age. And if we're attached to this physical body, then we will suffer. And so it's like we take care of the body so that we can practice being connected to spirit, practice being at one with God. And that attachment to the body is going to make me experience pain. I'm going to experience pain because my body gets injured. It's not as beautiful as I want it to be, or it's not, doesn't look as good. It doesn't have as many abs as that person with a million followers on Instagram has, right? Or I've got too much sagging skin. So we're going to be unhappy when we're solely focused on the body. And that was happening to me because I had this big goal of, oh, I want to be a CrossFit Games champion and be the fittest on earth and all this stuff. And it was very useful and helpful for me. Over 6.5 years, it was incredibly helpful for me. But then I had this realization of like, ah, here you are. You're getting too attached to the material again, too focused on the physical. And of course, you're going to suffer. You know, nobody wants to suffer, right? I don't think any one of us wants to experience suffering, to be unhappy, to be sick and to be sad. But we cause it. We cause it ourselves. We cause it through our own mind and belief systems because we haven't learned to control the mind. And so the same thing happens with a plant-based diet. The same thing happens with, you know, whatever we're doing. It's like we get so focused and attached on that thing. I was in really deep in the raw vegan community. And within a year or two of being a part of that, I realized like so many people were so stuck in this judgmental viewpoint that this is the only way, this is the best way. And if you don't go this way, then you're a terrible person and we're all better than you. And I'm like, this is supposed to be, we're supposed to be a spiritual community. We're supposed to be doing this for compassion, for sustainability, for health. And yet we're not welcoming other people's ideas and beliefs. We're judging others. We're in this cult-like mentality. And I just thought, that's not for me. You know, that's not for me. I had to get out of that because I could just see that it was very detrimental. And that's true, you know, for any diet, if you will, right? We get stuck in this diet mindset of like, this is the best diet, the only diet. And if you don't follow this diet, then you're a terrible person or you're not good enough or you should do better or you're killing animals or whatever. It's the same thing as religion. Right? I mean, there are dozens of sects of Christianity. There are dozens of sects of Buddhism. There are dozens of sects of Hinduism, but they all point to the same truth. They all point to the same God. They all point to the same realization that there is a creative, unified force we call God that animates all of us, and we are all connected to God through that force, through that energy, through that prana, through that chi, through that life force. And our whole purpose here on earth is to discover that for ourselves. And yet, if we go, my religion is the best one, the only one, and if you don't follow it, you're going to burn and go to hell because you're a terrible person. Then what about all those saints from other religions that became enlightened and transformed the world that were not part of your religion? How did they do it, right? How did they do it? Well, because all of these religions point to the same truth. Just like all real diets, if you will, point to the same truth. Really, it's about fundamentals. You know, the fundamentals are what? We should eat more real food. We should eat food that comes from nature as much as possible. We should reduce processed foods as much as possible. We should reduce processed sugar as much as possible. We should eat plenty of, you know, organic foods and fresh foods as much as possible. And yeah, if we want to practice compassion, if we want to heighten our spiritual awareness, if we want to care about animals, then we're going to adopt a plant-based diet. We're going to have love for animals and do the least amount of harm as possible. Is a vegan diet prevent the killing of all animals? Of course not. No, it doesn't. So you can't claim as a vegan that, oh, I save all animals. It's like, no, farming kills animals. You know, I walk outside, I step on ants accidentally. I kill animals. I was walking outside the other day. And it's like, the more I meditate, the more I connect to God and to my heart and to spirit. It's like the more compassion I'm feeling cultivated myself. And I was walking and I felt this crunch and I was like, oh no, I knew what it was, because it had just rained. Little tiny snail, you know, just smushed right under my foot. And I felt terrible in that moment. But then I thought, well, you know what? That was his dharma and his karma. Like, I had no idea that snail was there. It was very tiny. And I was not intending to kill it. And I walked and I smushed it. And, you know, I prayed for its soul. And then I moved on. I let it go, right? But if I sit there and judge myself for killing this innocent animal, or judge anybody else for killing an innocent animal, willingly or unwillingly, then we're disconnected from the true meaning of love and compassion, right? Love and compassion means unconditional. It means that we accept everybody as they are. Now, does that mean that we go out and condone certain things? No. Does it mean that, like, my kid's torturing an animal, you know, my 8-year-old son's torturing an animal, I'd be like, sit by and just watch him? No, I'm going to stop him and have a conversation with him. But I find far too often in our community, we get, you know, the plant-based community, if you will, it can become very judgmental. It can become very cultish. And I don't think that is the solution if we actually want to make a difference for the lives of animals, for humans, for the planet, right? I think compassion is number one. And that's, if we can have compassion for animals, then we should have compassion for each other. I think that's essential.
Save big this holiday season, all in the Kroger app. Buy 2 get 3 free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up. Then get a flavorful Kroger spiral sliced ham for 89 cents a pound with an additional $25 purchase. Limit 2, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.
There's so many directions we can go. It's like, wow, I'm kind of blown away by your story and everything. But the one thing that I want to comment on that I've also had a realization on is just attachment in general. And attachment can be to anything. And one of the big ones in my life is identity. So the identity of being a physician, even just the identity of being a helper, to the point where that can actually create problems in your own life, you know? But one thing I wanted to say, that I know this is going completely off all the topics I was going to ask you today, Nathan, but I've gotten really into listening to NDEs. I don't know if you listen to any near-death experience stories or any of that kind of stuff.
I've met a few people over the years. Yeah.
Yeah. Incredible. I mean, it's fascinating and I love it. And it really helps me in my spirituality and just feel that confidence that we're eternal and that there's no rush. There's no worry. We have pretty much all of eternity to experience everything we want. But one theme that I've noticed over and over and over in NDEs is that as soon as people start to transition, they immediately lose all attachment to the point where they don't even recognize their own bodies. It's like, who is that? What is that thing there? And isn't that interesting that we do have such an attachment to our bodies? And just like you're saying, I just turned 45 this month and I'm already mourning the fact that, you know, when it comes to my own athletic pursuits, I'm going to get slower. It's going to get harder. I'm, you know, never going to be as fast as I want to be anymore. And that's just part of this human experience and the human evolution. But one piece of me believes that we did that on purpose. Like we came to feel attachment because it's the only way to do it. Like it's to forget our true nature and to feel like this is the only thing, that this is the one permanent thing that, you know, it's gone and it's gone forever. That's the only way we can experience some of these negative emotions. Because otherwise, once you go to the spirit world, it's hard to, like, you don't feel, you know, some of these emotions that we feel on earth that you have become an expert at. So I'm curious if you have, and have you heard of people talk about that they chose their path, that they chose some of the things that they wanted to experience? Because I feel like you have gotten a lot of experience in some of those negative emotions, deep suffering, lots of trauma. Have you ever believed that, that maybe you chose some of that?
Yeah. I mean, you know, people have asked me over the years, do you have any regrets about your past and about your childhood and all the things you went through? And no, I have zero regrets, actually. And I haven't had regrets in a very long time. Do I wish that I did those things and would I do those things again? No, of course not. Like, do I feel good about doing the things that I did, robbing and lying and stealing and hurting? And of course not. But I would not change any of it because that was my karma. That was what I needed to come here to learn, to transcend, to then be able to help others, you know, who go through similar experiences, right? And so, you know, in the Vedas, it talks about karma and the you know, science, the yogic sciences talk about karma. And karma we think of today is like, what I do comes back to me, right? But what they teach is that follows you for lifetimes and your karma is your education path. So whatever I don't learn in this lifetime, I have to come back again and go through the experiences until I learn it, until I awaken, right? Until I awaken to my full expression and oneness, enlightenment of God. They teach that the ultimate expression, the ultimate purpose of being a human being here on earth, and we will come back thousands and thousands of times again until we achieve that, is that of Christ consciousness, of Buddha consciousness, of Yogananda and Sri Yukteswar and Lahiri Mahashai and Babaji and all these incredible saints and incredible beings that have achieved this incredible enlightened state of human oneness with God, that is our divine purpose. They teach that we will continue coming and suffering until we achieve that enlightenment, until we experience that for ourselves. And so as that's become more and more apparent to me, and I deeply believe that now, I'm like, well, what am I waiting for? You know, all this other stuff is like, it doesn't really matter as much as this one thing, that if our true potential is to be in harmony with pure bliss, pure ecstasy, right? I was taking ecstasy to feel ecstasy, and they teach the ecstasy of God is beyond anything even human words can describe. That when you experience that true bliss and ecstasy and oneness of God, when people go into what's called samadhi, right? I mean, they often may stay there for days because it is such an invigorating and nourishing experience, right? In that deep meditative state, that then they come back and go, their whole life has changed. And that is what I think is very similar to a near-death experience. Somebody goes through an NDE, they basically leave all attachment to the body and they go into spirit and they go into what I think is probably, you know, I'd have to ask some master yogis if that's the case, but it is probably an experience of samadhi, what's described as that blissful union with God. Because when they come back, that's how they describe it, right? I was at peace. I was light. I was full of love. It was like, I didn't want to leave. I was free. I had no pain. All I could feel was this bliss and this oneness. And then I was told, it's not your time yet. You have to go back. Or they're asked, usually it's like, right? Usually it's an option. It's like, but you have more to do. And so they reluctantly go back to their body. They reluctantly come back to the physical, but they had that taste. They had that experience. Anybody who's been on a really, you know, deep psychedelic experience is, I would say, was probably very similar, except there's limitations. I always think of psychedelics as like, let's say your oneness with God is at on the end of this bridge over here, and you're on the end of this bridge. It's over, you know, a giant ravine over a river hundreds of feet below. And, you know, psychedelics will give you a taste of God on the other bank, but you have to always come back. And you have to walk across that bridge yourself without psychedelics. It'll give you a little taste. It'll give you a glimpse of what that's like, of that, you know, anyone who's done psychedelics, at least with intention, knows that feeling of oneness with all, with the vibration. You see the energy of the trees and you feel one with the creator, with the created, with source. But there's limitation, right? It's like it opens up those pathways, but we can never live in that fully, which is why psychedelics are not generally very addictive, because I think that part of us knows. I think they're created to be like, hey guys, wake up a little bit. There's something way beyond this physical embodiment. There's something for you that's beyond this physical attachment, this attachment to ego and identity. And so what the yogis talk about is when the soul comes into the body, what happens is, as we're going through our karma, as we're going through our lessons and our learnings and our needed to awakening, these experiences, that the soul becomes identified with the physical body. The soul is one with God. It is a divine expression of God. It is that oneness with the bliss and the love and the wholeness of God. But when it enters into the body, it becomes identified with this physical being, with this body. And so then we go, oh, my body. You know, you look at little children, we have to teach them your body, your hand, your head. Like, they don't know that. They're still very much their soul being in the little one-year-old, two-year-old, three-year-old. It's not even until my kids were probably 4 or 5 till they understood, if I remember correctly, till they understood the concept of my, like, this is mine, my toy, give it back, right? Before then, it was just like, oh, what's this? What's this? Everything is so unique and new and different. If you take it away from them, they don't care. Like, there is no ego yet. The ego is taught, it's trained, it's learned, right? We learn it through our environment. And you see, you know, children that are brought up in a very, let's say, spiritual, you know, enlightened family, they have much less of that physical identification, much less of that ego identification of, oh, this is my body. This is, you know, everything that happens to it, this is me. But what the yogis teach is to guide us through, is to say, hey, practice meditation. In your meditations, connect to the universe, connect to the love of God, connect, expand yourself beyond the body, beyond the earth, out into the universe, and feel that infinite oneness, feel that expansiveness outside of your body, and recognize and realize that your soul is that, and that your body is just a vehicle for you. It's an important vehicle. We need to honor it. We need to take care of it, feed it good food, exercise it, make sure it stays healthy. But that's not who we really are, right? This body is not who we are. And I'm guilty of totally identifying with my body and, you know, practicing overcoming that attachment, because the attachment of identity, as you were talking about, like, that is the cause of so much of our suffering, right? Oh, she called me an idiot. You're an idiot. Why'd you call me an idiot? No, you're an idiot, right? Like, we take that personal. I love Don Miguel Ruiz as he talks about the Toltec teachings, which is, you know, one of the 4 agreements is never take anything personal. But how hard is that? It's easy to say, oh yeah, I won't ever take anything personal. But why do we take things personal? When, why is that so hard to practice? Someone says, you know, you're not a real doctor, right? And you're like, what? What are you talking about? Yes, I am. I went to school. I got this. I have that, right? It's like we get defensive. Or people tell me, you know, it's like, you're not a doctor. You don't know what you're talking about. And it's like, I could be attached to that and be identified with that and get upset. Or I could say, yeah, you're right. I'm not a doctor. Thank you. Like, let it go. That is all based on our ego identity. And through meditation and through practicing, realizing that we are actually not this body, our soul is so much more than this physical reality. Then what I notice in my own life is, like, I'm becoming less and less attached, less and less attached. Insults just often fly off of me, right? Like, they just don't affect me as much anymore. You know, it's like, yeah, I'll still get triggered with things. I still have things that I'm healing and working through, but it's so much less than it ever was before. And rather than, you know, get into an argument and continue the argument and prove that I have to be right, it's like, oh no, I can just let that go. I can actually see, oh, there's no benefit there. It's just my ego. Just my ego. My soul is so much more than that. I can just back off and let it go. I don't have to be right. Doesn't matter if I'm wrong. And that's through, we gain that awareness and that wisdom through meditation. There's really no other place that I'm aware of, maybe through a trauma, maybe through a big awakening moment, maybe through psychedelics, but really through meditation is where we can gain that deeper awareness.
And I think the root of all of that is our disconnection, because we come here into our human body, we come here into Earth, and we're automatically cut off from that knowing that we really are all one. It's all one energy, and we really are infinitely, deeply loved. But when we get disconnected, like we are in these human bodies, the fear comes in that maybe we aren't loved. And I think that's, for me, the core is, when I have issues, is that feeling of like, well, they don't like me, they don't love me, nobody loves me because of these extremes. But really the truth is that this is all just a simulation. It's, you know, virtual reality. The truth is we're infinitely deeply loved and we're all connected. Even that person that we can't stand, we're one, you know, this is just a simulation. But I mean, it's interesting. One thing I wanted to say, the thing that I've read when reading more about NDEs, the difference between a psychedelic experience and an NDE, what I understand is that a psychedelic experience is kind of like watching it in a movie. It's not going to be, even though people say, of course, when they have, I've never had a psychedelic experience personally, so I can't say personally, but they feel like it's really vivid and strong. But compared to an NDE, it's not even a little bit, you know? And
I can tell
whenever you have
some of my deepest meditations, psychedelics, experiences don't even
not the same. Yeah. And that an NDE becomes almost permanently engraved in your memory, like it happened a second ago. Like people that have NDEs, they never forget it. They can recall every single thing like it just happened. It's like permanently engraved, where psychedelic experience, it becomes, you know, it fades over time, becomes weaker and weaker. And so who knows? Is it something happening in the brain that's different? Or is it really that you are getting this spiritual connection when you have an NDE? Well, I know that we've gone, you know, we've been talking a long time, but I do want to talk to you a little bit about cancer and why you're so passionate about helping people that have been diagnosed with cancer, because I know that that's a big part of your work.
Yeah. And I just want to say to what you said about that feeling of like, oh, maybe I'm not loved. Like, I've absolutely felt that. I think everybody tuning in would admit that they felt that, right? I mean, I remember I was kicked out of my house when I was 15 and my mom didn't know what to do with me. And I felt abandoned, you know, nobody loves me. And she loved me dearly. What I found out later was she was praying to God to take care of me. And interestingly, I literally just learned this the other day. We were talking about this. She said, no, when I couldn't handle it anymore. And I just gave you to God. I said, God, just take care of him. Take care of him. I can't do this anymore. And shortly after, she found out I was moving to San Diego, and she's like, why are you sending him to San Diego, God? What the heck?
That's not what I meant, God.
Right. Yeah. It's not what I meant. And I told her, I was like, well, that's exactly what needed to happen. That was the right thing. So thank you. Thank you for letting go and giving me to God, because that's exactly what needed to happen. And, you know, what I can say is there is no love greater than experiencing that love of God, knowing that you are loved, knowing that you are love. You know, you can sit in meditation, connect to your heart, connect to the feeling of love, connect to God, connect to the universal spirit, and feel that love, feel that peace, right? And there's, when that comes from within, and the more we experience that, it's like, it doesn't really matter if any humans love me at all, because I know that I am love, that that love is inside me, and that God loves me and all of us unconditionally, right? And so, talking about cancer, I mean, that's a big part of cancer is learning to understand why you're diagnosed with cancer, why the cancer formed in the first place. When my grandpa was diagnosed with cancer and I went to visit him and saw the suffering he was going through, and I learned that the suffering, the pain, the physical pain, his hair falling out, his physical pain, the barely walk to the restroom, the mental fogginess, that wasn't the cancer causing that. In fact, it was the chemotherapy and radiation that was destroying his body and destroying his immune system. And then he shortly passed away after that. It was 2013. And I wanted to learn everything I could about cancer so I could help anybody else in my family. You know, I just felt like I felt hopeless and helpless when he passed away. And so I wanted to do something about it. And so I got deep into cancer research and interviewing probably over 400, 500 top experts in the world now. Produced summits, conferences, magazines, have written books, have produced masterclasses, have spoken to dozens and dozens of cancer conquerors. They taught me, right? It's like, yeah, the research, I've learned a lot through the research. I've learned a lot about diet and nutrition and meditation and holistic lifestyle approach for cancer prevention and healing cancer. But really learning from the cancer conquerors, what did they do to reverse stage four cancers when they were sent home, you know, said, you'll never see your grandchildren grow up. And stage four cancer, Elaine Gibson, here she is years later in her 70s, healthier than she's ever been. No more cancer, right? Learning from them, what'd you eat? How'd you do it? What'd you think? How'd you meditate? You know, what were all the things that you did? And learning from the doctors, what are you doing to treat cancer patients? What are you seeing their results? So I have a mastermind group called the Holistic Leadership Council, and we meet quarterly, and we talk about some of the latest cutting edge solutions, not just for cancer, but health in general, holistic health. And so, you know, they taught me over the last 12 years or so, 11 years, what causes cancer and what can we do about it? And really, cancer, how I define cancer is it's our body screaming for help. It's our body saying, and our soul saying, hey, there's something going on here that needs your attention. It needs your attention deeply. And the cancer really, like when the cancer cells form into a tumor, the tumor is really there to keep you alive, right? It's trying to form all those cancer cells into a single place, but they replicate so rapidly. And the reason being is because they need a lot of energy. They're dysfunctional. So think about this, the cell's dysfunctional. So what's dysfunctional in your life, right? What's dysfunctional in your emotions, your relationship? You know, you ask your cancer patient, what was dysfunctional in your life leading up to a cancer diagnosis? Everyone will tell you exactly what it was. And that's almost always one of the root causes. I say one of because there's very often more than one. But almost always there's an emotional component in every cancer patient I've ever talked to leading up to that cancer diagnosis. Loss of a loved one, trauma, rape, you name it. Any kind of emotional trauma or physical trauma. Breast cancer often is related to a child, son, for example. Your emotional issue. Testicular cancer very often related to a son. You know, breast cancer very often related to a child. It's not always, but every part of the body, very often you can find commonalities with different emotional traumas. But yes, we know that toxins damage the mitochondria, damage DNA can cause the cells to break down and become cancerous. And so we want to drink clean water. We want to avoid things that have heavy metals, these heavy metals that can, anything that causes inflammation and anything that damages DNA or damages mitochondria. And those two things, if we focus on that, we're going to live a pretty healthy life in general, because pretty much all the diseases, including cancer, are lifestyle related. I mean, most cancers are not genetic. Most people don't realize that. In fact, less than 5% of cancers are even genetic related. Yeah, if you have the BRCA1 gene, your chances of breast cancer are higher. But if you believe genes cause cancer, as you know, my colleague and friend Bruce Lipton says, then all women with the BRCA1 gene would be diagnosed with cancer. But 50% of women with that gene never get cancer. So clearly genes don't cause cancer. Genes are the environment, the expression, right? They express through the environment. And so we can change the environment. We can turn genes on and off, which means we can downregulate the expression of those genes. And how we do that is by cleaning up the environment, reducing toxins, pesticides, heavy metals, endocrine disruptors, processed foods, processed sugars, anything that's going to cause damage to our cells at a chronic level, anything that's going to cause chronic inflammation, right? At a chronic level, inflammation at a chronic level. We reduce those things and mitigate them. And then we increase the things that bring an anti-inflammatory effect, that bring antioxidants into the body, right? Plant-based diet, as long as you're eating whole food, real food, plant-based diet, lots of fruits and vegetables, nuts and seeds, legumes, you know, beans, tofu, quinoa, these kinds of things, then you're going to see real nutrients coming into the body. But you could be 100% vegan and unbelievably unhealthy, because, and a lot of people are. The people I talk to say, oh, veganism didn't work for me. And I say, well, tell me what you ate. Almost always, most of the time, it was either they're on a junk food vegan diet or you know, eating tons and tons of processed food, processed vegan foods, which are not very healthy for you, by the way. I mean, you could eat potato chips all day long. Those are vegan, but those are not good for you and they're not good nutrition. Or they're not eating enough balance of different kinds of foods. So they're not getting enough nutrient diversity, not eating enough. I talked to a woman the other day and she said, oh, I got anemia on a vegan diet. And I said, well, did you eat any beans? And she said, no. And I said, well, of course you're going to get anemia, right? It's because people don't realize where their nutrition comes from. And they hear, oh, plant-based diet, let me eat more plants. And then they just eat two or three groups instead of, you know, all the different groups you should be eating. So you should be eating a diversity of vegetables and fruits every day, beans and grains every day, some kind of beans, some kind of grain. And then more of the medicinals, the onions, mushrooms, berries, and other herbs that bring medicine. And then some nuts, small amount of nuts and seeds. You eat like that, like my friend Joel Furman says, G-bombs, greens, beans, onions, mushrooms, berries, and seeds, and you eat a good diverse diet every day, you're going to have almost nothing to ever worry about. Maybe you need to take a B12 vitamin supplement, big deal. Maybe some vitamin D if you're not getting enough sunshine, big deal. Maybe some omegas if you're not getting, if your body's not converting enough ALA to EPA and DHA, big deal, take some algae oil. Hey, you're good to go, right? But most people don't know what they don't know about a plant-based diet. I mean, that's been my focus on research for almost two decades now, is how to eat healthy and live healthy. And so everything in that regard, every cancer conqueror I've ever actually met and talked to has done it on a plant-based diet. Most of them vegan or raw vegan or lots and lots of fresh vegetable juices. It was one of the core staples, in addition to meditation, stress reduction, emotional healing as one of the foundations. Right. And then focusing on sleep, focusing on self-nurture, and then things, you know, sauna, red light therapy, ozone. There's a lot of other adjunctive things that can help. But if you don't have those two foundations, clean, healthy, whole food diet and, you know, meditation, stress reduction, spiritual practice, and good sleep, it's called those three, then all the other things that you do are supplements, you name it, are just 10%, 20%. So if you got to get the 80% right first. And I would add exercise to that too. Exercise, I would say the top four foundation actually, and the right kind of exercise. Some exercise might make you worse. Other exercise will definitely make you better. And so, yeah, that's been, we've seen incredible case studies, people following our cancer coaching program, following our documentary series, following, you know, my masterclasses, people email in and say, you know, thank you so much. You guys saved my life. I had stage 3, stage 4 cancer. Did everything you said. 2 years later, my cancer is completely gone. So we've literally seen miracles happen. It's incredible. Even after they were, you know, treatment out, they basically, they did chemotherapy, radiation didn't work. Cancer came back with a vengeance. We've seen a number of those cases. So it's been incredible to see, you know, we've reached millions of people through our work. And it's been a blessing to see when people actually go in and learn what causes cancer and then what can I do about it? And their whole life changes. It's really a beautiful thing.
Wow. That's incredible. I love how everything is based on the foundations of lifestyle medicine, for sure. You know, you have to have the nutrition, you have to have your good sleep, stress management, all that kind of stuff. But then also managing those thoughts and emotions and getting to that root cause of inflammation that's being caused by your own thoughts. You know, because, you know, just like before we started the recording, I was telling you right now, there's a lot of changes going on. I'm scared. You know, that fear comes in. That fear can cause negative thoughts and feelings. And I know it doesn't feel good in your body. That not feeling good in your body, those are chemicals. Those are chemicals doing something in your body. So that has to be addressed as well. Well, Nathan, this has been fantastic, but let's go through the wrap-up questions because I know we could talk for hours. I am certain of that. What do you wish more people knew? And what does it mean to be human? And then give us all your contacts so that we know where to reach you online.
Oh, beautiful questions. All right. What do I wish more people knew? I wish more people knew that this body is important and we should take care of it, but it's just a vehicle to bring us closer to oneness with spirit. And so we shouldn't focus on physical health over spiritual health. We should focus on spiritual health primarily and keep a focus on physical health to keep us healthy through the process. I've gone to both ends of that extreme where I forgot the body and was only spiritual focused, and then I had physical problems. And the other end of that extreme where I only focus on the body and left spirituality at like 10% over here, 15%, and then had problems. And so it's like, we need that balance. We need that balance. But if you're going to prioritize, our spiritual health is the most important. Spiritual, mental, emotional, physical is important. We shouldn't forget it, but it shouldn't be everything. And then the second thing, what was the second question?
What does it mean to be human?
Oh, what does it mean to be human? I don't know. I'm an alien, so I couldn't tell you what it means to be human.
Everybody listening, he had to lie when he said that he was human.
No, it's funny. Actually, I don't think I'm an alien, but one of my spiritual mentors, our tour guide Tan, he used to always joke about him being an alien, but I actually really believe he is an alien. Definitely believe he came from another planet. I think, what does it mean to be human? And human has so many definitions. Actually, this is something he used to say to me 17 years ago, was that we are a human being. The human is the physical part and the being is the spiritual part. And they're both important, right? The human is the brain. The being is the mind. The human, we have the heart. The being, we have the soul. And when these two things, when the human and the being are working together in harmony, then we live a really blessed life. Then we live a beautiful life. Then we live a happy life. If either of those are out of harmony, we're going to suffer, right? If our heart and our mind are out of harmony, if our brain, our body's out of harmony, our soul and our, you know, thinking is out of harmony, then we're going to suffer. But if we can bring these two things into harmony, being a human being, a spiritual, physical being together, then life is really beautiful. So being a human to me is that perfect combination. Finding that oneness with spirit and the physical together in harmony.
Yeah, I love that. That's beautiful. All right, Nathan, where can we find you online? Where can we get all your books and your resources and everything that you offer?
Yeah, I think just my website's a good place, nathancrane.com. And you can join our newsletter there too. We send out a lot of holistic health, very researched information, ebooks, resources, tools, you name it, to help you live your healthiest, happiest life. And that's free. That's at nathancrane.com. And got a few social channels out there. So you can find me on Instagram, places like that.
Awesome. Well, Nathan, thank you so much for this amazing conversation that went very spiritual very quickly. So I appreciate it. I really enjoyed it. Really enjoyed getting to know you. Thank you for everything that you do for everybody in the world and how much you give of yourself and the wisdom that you've accumulated over your lifetime. So it was great to meet you. And I hope that you have a very plantastic day.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. My name is Nathan Crane, and I am human.
Thank you for listening to another episode of I Am Human. I would be so honored if you subscribe to the podcast so that you never miss an episode. We love our listeners and take your feedback seriously. If you have questions or constructive feedback, you can email us at podcast@dryami.com. That's podcast@dryami.com. I am your host, Dr. Yami Cazorla Lancaster. I Am Human is produced by myself and Alejandra Parra. Graphics designed by Alejandra Parra. Music by Angela Sof with Glowbox Productions and edited by the Castos production team. Remember, human, you are here for a reason. Have fun, explore, and live your life to the fullest.
Save big this holiday season, all in the Kroger app. Buy two, get three free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up. Then get a flavorful Kroger spiral sliced ham for 89 cents a pound with an additional $25 purchase. Limit two, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.